Mishnah says, Hamafata knows Shloshet Dvarim Va'ones Arba. Hamafata knows Voshev Gam Uknas, which we've already seen a few times. Mosul of Ones Shnos and Nisat Tsar, and that's what the sugya that we're going to read in the Gemara is going to analyze. Ma be Ones Lamafata, which is going to be the next part of the Gemara. Ones knows Tsar Va'Mafata knows Tsar. The first nafkumi is what we just said. Ones pays Tsar, and Mafata doesn't pay Tsar. Ha'onis knows Biyad Mafata Shiyosi. The other nafkamina is pretty mefurish in the Chumash. The Ones pays the Knas right away regardless. The Mafata only pays the Knas as an alternative to marriage. Ha'onis shows about Tzitzo Mafata Mratul Hotzi Motzi. The Ones is stuck drinking from his Hatzitz is like a poor quality klicheres. Right, he's stuck with her, while the Mefata doesn't have to marry her or can divorce her if he does marry her. Keitza shows about Tzitzo. To what extent do we say he shows about Tzitzo? Afilu Higeres Milisuma, even if she is lame or blind, he's still stuck with her. Afilu Mukashrin, even if she is full of boils. Nimtzabat Bar Erva, that's if we're talking about in Gashmias, right? If she's not physically attractive or functional. However, if there is a halachic impediment, if nimtzavat bar erva, which most Rishonim assume means she committed adultery after he married her, or she ain't love of Yisrael, or she's not allowed to marry him, she's a mamzeres, the sino, one of those things where there's halachic issue to marry, then ain't a rush l'kaima. Then he is not allowed to marry her, even if he married her, he's not allowed to stay married to her, meaning the obligation for the onus to marry the anusa does not override an isser if she'd be asur to him. Shenamar for losi alisha isha ruyelo, as it says losi alisha, and the drusha at least shot in the mishnah seems to be that it's talking about isha haruyelo losiya means lo only if she's fit for him halachically, not if she's halachically forbidden to him. Okay, the Gemara is going to analyze the first part of the mishnah, which was the first nafkamina of tsar. So the Gemara asks tsar demai. What tsar are we talking about? And, you know, first maybe we'll read through the Gemara and then try to go back and analyze step by step. So at first, Shmuel's father says that tsar, that he threw her on the ground, meaning not of the Maisabiyah, but that he used violence before the Maisabiyah. If so, that the tsar is not talking about the tsar of the Maisabiyah, it's talking about the tsar of just generally grabbing and throwing her violently. Then, if he took her gently and put her down on a nice silk mattress, then he would be potter. If you say he is potter,
why there's always a principle, but chachamim are not mechalek. All right, something can happen sometimes. Normally, this is the standard, and you go by the standard.
And that's a very broad question. Often we find cases where the chamart mechalek is when it comes to gzeros, because that's part of the nature of being a gzera. Here we're not talking gzeros from Dini Mamonos. In Dini Mamonos, it is very not poshut whether the chachamim are mechalek or not. We find in some cases they make general rules even Dini Mamonos, but we find probably more cases that they judge each case individually. It's not like a gzera could just say stay away. Here, it's, you know, it's a judging of the rights of two sides. So in the Gemara Baba Kama, it actually might work out l'shitasa. You do have machlok stanoim. To what extent do we judge each case individually? To what extent do we make a general standards in Dini Mamonos? If I recall correctly, there's machlok shir Shimon and Chachamim about Eish, or Shimon judged individually and the Chachamim make a standard, if you'd want to tie that in. But it's very complex. Generally, what I would say is, if you want an interesting analysis of it, it's following Moshe Silver. Doesn't he have a street up in Beit Vegan? No? He was a deputy Sgan Nasi of the Supreme Court. He was a Ben Torah. He was a Sgan Nasi of the Supreme Court. He has a very nice sefer. Something like Kol Midos Chachamim Kach or Kachi, something, I forget. Okay. Where he deals at great length within the realm of Dini Mamonos, which is, you know, what he was an expert in, whether we should make general rules or not. I'm not going to get into it now, but I think that when we're talking about Hezek, evaluating Hezek, The usual case is that we evaluate on a case-by-case basis. We don't make a general rule. So let's grant Rav Shimon that. Rav Shimon argues on the Mishnah and says that there is no tzar ever, not even for a nusach, so for l'tzar tachas baila, because in the end, she will have this tzar when she gets married anyway. Meaning, he's not actually, you're right, he's causing her pain, which she wouldn't have had today otherwise, but she would have had it later. Now she won't have it later, and therefore he's not adding any tzar to her, he's just getting it over with now instead of later, and therefore he is not chayev. Rulo, and what do they say back to him? Ain no domino bells, but onus lamenus rutzo, and they say no. A be'ila be'ones, not the same as rutzo, meaning right now he did it be'ones. Later on, she'll get married, it'll be rutzo. So you can't say she's going to suffer later. You don't suffer when it's baratzon like you do when it's bonus, and therefore an onus should be tzar.
That's why I asked. But here, we are going by generalization, because not everyone gets married. Most girls get married, but not everyone gets married.
Okay.
So here we are going by the...
Okay, that is a fascinating question. Who... Did we see someone who talked about that? I saw one of the Achronim dealt with that. I'm trying to remember where. That's a great question. Who says she'll get married? She can always tie and I won't get married. So one answer might be that, no, we assume people do what the Torah thinks people should do, and in the Torah vision, people are supposed to get married. And therefore, it's not a valid tie to say I won't live the lifestyle that a person is supposed to. Alternatively, I saw one of the Achronim, I forget where, he said, since we're paying knas, and according to the Ramban, knas is the reason he pays knas because now it's going to be harder for her to get married and damage her marriage prospects. Then she can only collect the knas because she says, "I did want to get married." And therefore, mimanashach. If you want the knas because you do want to get married, you can't say you don't want to get married here. You have to be consistent. So since it's worth it to get the 50 to sell the shekel of knas, then we're going to assume she does want to get married because if she tined it, mimanashach. She tined it, I'm never going to get married. Then we'd say, so you don't get 50 shekel knas, and it wouldn't be worth it. Okay, that's a cleverness I saw in one of the Achronim.
Doesn't mean it's going to happen. Again, you're going by the generalization.
Okay.
That's not, you're going by a generalization. Yes, there might be specific cases, not, but that goes back to my original question about
if he throws it down, he has to pay.
No, that's pashut. But okay, let's finish. Okay, it is an interesting. I do hear the taina. Okay, let me think about it a little more. What is the point? What are the, in Pshat of the Gemara, what are they trying to say? We thought Tsar of the Mishnah meant throwing her on the ground. Then clearly, there's no Havim, you know, what is Rav Shimon saying? Oh, well, when she got married, her husband would have thrown her on the ground, like, man, if you taste it, that doesn't happen. Therefore, obviously, he meant some Tsar of the Bia, not Tsar of throwing her on the ground. And then it makes sense that he says, well, the Bia is going to happen later if it doesn't happen now. And they say, well, it depends in the context of the Bia. So obviously, the Tsar has something to do with the Bia. So therefore, Ella... we don't know that. That seems to be the simple shot.
That's
a simple shot. Ella Amr of Nachman or Rabbi Rav. Tzar shall piece a girl line. It must be the tzar of opening the legs. So it's a little unclear exactly what this pisuk reglayim means. It might have been unclear to everyone what pisuk reglayim means. V'chein hu omer v'tipsiki is raglech l'chol over. Okay, in that pasuk in Yecheskel, it's obviously used metaphorically. It's not referring to someone who actually engaged in sexual relations. It's referring to Am Yisrael worshiping Avodah Zarah, which is metaphor is adultery, and he's criticizing Am Yisrael. But now, exactly why she opened her legs for everyone who passed by. She was a Zona Gemura, Yecheskel. He sometimes has these harsh metaphors. Accuses Am Yisrael of.
A lot of them use this kind of metaphor.
Yes, correct. A lot of them use the metaphors. Yecheskel sometimes knows how to express it, knew how to express it harshly. Baharaya, look at all the historical dinim on last week's Haftorah, whether we're allowed to read harsh criticism, whether we're not for now. The why they bring a pasuk here is unclear. Some of the Achronim suggest they bring the pasuk because there's a euphemism. Pisuk Reglayim is some sort of nice way of saying, to open the legs and to show that this is something that's connected to Tashmish, the Bia, They brought this pasuk in Yechezkel, and that's, we know, how do you know, what do we mean by this phrase? Ah, we mean something sexual, and the reason we use that phrase is because of the pasuk in Yechezkel. So it could be the pasuk in Yechezkel is just trying to clarify this euphemism for people who are unfamiliar with the language. The Ritva goes a little further and said, nah, they don't bring psukim just to clarify what they mean by the language. A pasuk actually is brought to teach us, like, a fact. And therefore he says that this is proving that Pisuk Reglayim has tsar. Why? Because why would the pasuk say Batifsiki is Raglich Halover? Why Dafka told me that Pisuk Reglayim must be showing how bad she was. That not only did she sleep with all the men, she was even willing to undergo tsar to sleep around. And therefore, this, since the pasuk must be, the tipski is regularly adding something, and what's adding might be that she was even willing to undergo a little discomfort in order to sleep around. Therefore, that shows that pisuk reglayim has tsar. Okay, so that's two ways to read pshat. One pshat would be that it's just helping us understand the meaning of the words. The Ritva says, no, it's a proof that pisuk reglayim has tsar. What exactly is does pisuk reglayim mean? So the pasuk pshat, I saw some achronim want to question this. Pasuk pshat is that pisuk reglayim means okay, I saw there was one day in one of the achronim, I never heard of before, a little obscure, who says pisuk reglayim means breaking the basulim. But that's not, pisuk reglayim is just a metaphor for breaking the basulim. But that's not the simple pshat, that's not the simplest pshat. That's not the simplest shot, let's say, in the Gemara, especially since, Matifsky's regularly called, that's not the simplest shot in the Gemara. I don't know. What's the simplest shot? It's a little hard to know what's the simplest shot. Okay. Maybe Pisuk Reglayim means breaking the Basulim. Tosfos clearly does not understand that way, and many Rishon Achron don't understand the way. They understand, no, breaking the Basulim we have words for. Right? Pisuk Reglayim means, prior to the breaking of Basulim, there has to be an opening of the legs and a beginning of Bia, and it means that beginning of the Bia process. Okay, so Pisuk Reglayim here, let's go with what Tosfos assumes, or what most Rishon Achronim assume, that it means the beginning of Bia before the Basulim are broken. That's what the tsar is, and that's why, now it makes sense. The Rebbe Shimon says the onus doesn't make tsar because that's going to happen when she gets married anyway. And the Chum say back to him, now when she gets married, but Ratzon, it's not going to be the same as if it happens, but onus. The Ihachi, the Gemara asks, Mefuta Nami. Then a Mefuta also has the tsar piece of Reglayim, right? Mefuta, meaning when we thought it was Chavatol having karka, no Chavatol having karka for Mefuta, but piece of Reglayim is part of the Bia. That's part of the process. There can't be Bia without piece of Reglayim. So obviously the Mefuta also has tsar. So why is the Mefuta not being tsar? Just reading the simplest way. Amar Rav Nachman, Rabbi Rabu, a mashal Mefuta, my daughter, Dama, Lodim, Shom, look very prashi, Ryan, Shalee, Potter. No, the mashal Mefuta is, someone says, cure my clothing. She writing is actually like fancy clothing. And be putter, meaning she lets him inflict the tsar on her, he's putter. The Gemara asks, Shali davu nitu. That doesn't make any sense. Mefuta has no right to be mochalis. It's not her right to collect the money, it's her father's. So who cares that she agreed? Just like the Kanash, she agreed, but it still goes to the father. So to the tsar. So it still goes to the father. Elam Rav Nachman Rav Ravua Pekoshiban almost Mefuta in La Tsar. No, the smart women say that a Mefuta doesn't have tsar piece of Reglayim. And then everything is perfect sense. The onus pays because he made tsar in Pisuk Reglayim. The Mefata doesn't pay because there is no tsar in Pito. It's not she was mochel. There just is no tsar in Mefata in Pisuk Reglayim. And that's exactly what the Chachamim say to Rabbi Shimon in the Brisa. And then they just bring some proofs. Don't we see that even a Mefuta, meaning they, I don't think they went around interviewing Mefutas.
Yeah,
in
what
the classic sense, they mean married women, right? Who should be the same feeling as a Mefuta. Mm-hmm. Don't we see when girls get married that there is tsar? Amar Abaye, Amar Liyeh, meaning they make a big deal. Everyone talks about it. Amar Liyeh, right? His perhaps adopted mother or nursemaid. Yeah, they make a big deal out of it, but it's really not a big deal. It's like in a hot water bath, you know? So if I pour the hot water on my head since I have hair, so it's very comfortable. If I was bald, so it would be a little, you know, the same hot water that for people with a head of hair is comfortable. For bald people, since it goes right on the scalp, it's a little uncomfortable, but it's not a big deal. So that's, of course, it's a little something, but it's not a big deal. It's not something you would pay for that you could sue for in court. The Rav Amar Amar Libas Chistik Yirivda De Kuslisa, like the cutting implement of the cupping that they used to do, bloodletting, meaning it's like, you know, like getting a shot or something, like it's not a big deal. Maybe less than our shots. Rav Papa Amar Li Bas Abba Tzura, this is quoting his last two, quoting their wives, Ki Nema Kushi Be Chinchi, like hard bread on the gums, that, you know, if you have a little hard, old stale old bread on the gums, it's a little grating. But again, it's not something you sue for that's collectible in court. It's a very, very minor kind of tsar.
So is the Gemara going back to the by an onus is different, or is it rejecting, or is it
no? Clearly, we think that it's different, right? Because an onus has tsar,
so
and
really
it doesn't.
Yeah,
it's still working with the chachamim said in the brisa, right? Ain't a domino bells brought to domino bells, but onus. Now, okay, there's a few things we have to figure out. We have to take this apart first. I just want to get a shot in the Gemara. What is the tsar that? Because especially the way I read the Gemara, right? That first they talked about throwing her on the ground, and then they talked about pisak reglayim, about sort of the opening of the legs and the beginning of the so Tosus already asked the question in Aleph. What about the most obvious possibility? Like, why are they starting chavat al yarkark this that? We all know what hurts. The breaking of the Masulim, that's the tsar, right? The breaking of the Masulim, right? There's blood, there's a wound, there's actually breaking something. Everyone knows that hurts. And Tosa says, and not only that, right? Tsar to my question, read the Maitami Baile. What's the whole question? People, God, Hashashi, Tsar Godel of Sula Virishona. Don't we know the Vian that breaks the Masulim, that's a tsar? The Kamakhtanis Cholos Mizah. And in his days, right, a lot of young girls, if they got married, would even be sick from the trauma of the breaking of the basulim. Okay, nowadays our katanas don't get married, so we don't necessarily have that with Sias. You know, I don't know, we never heard of a 25-year-old girl who was, like, sick in bed afterwards for days because of the trauma of breaking the basulim. But it could be, here we're talking about katanos, naros, etc. In those days, that's when they used to get married, and Tosfos is made that he saw people really be injured by that, really be traumatized physically. So isn't it obviously the tsar? What's the whole discussion of the Gemara? What's their whole havmina? So Tosfos here has two answers, one of which is even a big chiddush. What's the two answers of Tosos? Why didn't they say that tsar breaking the basulim?
Because the pain doesn't come
until
afterwards, it's
grama. Right, so the Ri says the pain doesn't come until afterwards, it's grama. The Ri here makes a big chiddush in Bava Kamma, which, you know, we're not going to fully evaluate now because we need more Bava Kamma than that. But a tremendous chiddush in Bava Kamma, he says, when it comes to the tsar breaking the basulim, now what's his insight here? The Pisak Raglayim is like before the real Bia, right? The bringing the Basulim is Mamish Bishas Bia. It says Bishas Bia, there's a Tsar bringing the Basulim, there's also a Hana of Bia, there's something physically pleasurable about that, and therefore the Hana of Bia cancels out the Tsar bringing the Basulim, and therefore they don't, you know, she doesn't feel the Tsar is bringing the Basulim Bishaito. Okay, that's the Ri's assumption of Tzias. One can question the assumption of Mitzias, but I think that's, even so, that's going to be less Mechodesh perhaps than the assumption it did. Pisak Raglayim would be before there's Hana'ah, so therefore that would be a Tsar. But the Bia itself is Bishas Hana'ah, and Bishas Hana'ah, and the Tsar cancel each other out, so she doesn't have Tsar. When does she, how come the Kamek Tanis Cholos Mizah? Ah, the Tsar of that comes afterwards. That's his assumption of Mitzias. The Tsar of Bia Rishona, breaking the Basulim, even though we might not have thought this way on our own, we would have thought, no, the Iker Tzar is B'shaita, when you break something. But he says, no, because of the Hanas Bia, the Iker Tzar is later. And that's an assumption of Tzias. you know, let's grant it for the sake of argument. And then he makes an assumption in din. His assumption in din is, since the tzar only comes afterward, that's called grumma. He didn't cause her pain with his action. He put her in a situation where later she would feel pain because of his action, and grumma is potter. It's only a grumma tzar, and therefore there's no chiyuv tzar for the breaking of the besulin. This is a tremendous chiddush that, you know, if I physically injure you in a way that you only feel the pain later, then that's called a grumma. Meaning, I injured you b'maisa. Just the pain came about later. That's a big chiddush, especially since, let's just take an example, right? Out of the five things that a kovel has to pay, how many of them for sure the damage comes later?
How about
Shevis and Ripoy, right? The moment I hit you, there's no Shevis, right? I'm not stopping you from work. It's when you're then injured, you can't go to work. Ripoy, the moment I'm hit you, you don't pay a doctor. Later you go to the doctor. So the Rush deals with Shota and brackets, right? He says, no, Shevis and Ripoy, since that's the derech that it comes later, so obviously that's Chayav. But Tsar, which is normally the derech, the Iker Tsar, is Bishas Havolah. Therefore, if the tzar only comes later, that is grumma. This is a tremendous chiddush. The Rush in the Rush in Bava Kamma, even at slightly more details, with a different sounding maskana, as Beis Yosef points out in the Chush Mishpat, in the Shut Rush that was on the Makoros, he says, this re, it's fascinating because there's no other makor in Shas except for this question in our sugya. This re is a makor for black and white, east and west, and Dine Mamonos in real life court cases. What if so, Reuven injures Shimon, and Shimon suffers a certain degree of tsar b'shaito, but then, like, it's bad and it gets infected, and he keeps suffering. Maybe he feels pain for days or weeks, right? So I think that in the United States of America, and all jurisdictions I'm familiar with, if someone beats someone up and then they continue suffering, or even doesn't beat them up, right? Causes them an injury and they continue suffering for years, all the suffering over all those years they have to pay tsar for. Says the Rush, according to this Re, tsar is only b'shas ma'isa. Any tsar that comes later is grumma and you don't have to pay. So, you know, if I mean,
derech klal, like you get in a car accident, you don't feel pain the first day, you feel it the next day or 2 days later.
So the Re says you're putter. The Re says you don't have to pay for that tsar because it's grumma.
All insurance companies possibly like to read.
they try at least. That's a tremendous finish in real life court cases. That can make all the difference in the world. Meaning that could be 95% of the tsar, could be later. And the Re would say you are, the Re would say you're potter. And then he points out that according to the other day in this Tosos, you'd be chayav. Because this is the only mocker and shash for this chiddush lector, which is a big finish. Because your damage was b'maisa. You didn't indirectly injure him. You injured him directly. Just the pain came later. So this chiddush that, even though the repoint shevis that comes later with you is maisa, but that tsar that comes later with you is grumma is a tremendous chiddush. But that's the chiddush the re here, halacha l'maisa. It's not discussed explicitly in the Shulchan Aruch Nosei Kelim, this machlokes. But the Beis Yosef, I'm not sure exactly why. It's discussed by the Torah in the Beis Yosef. It doesn't make it into the Shulchan Aruch and the Mefarshim on the Shulchan Aruch, but the Beis Yosef Paskins, based on the Shulchan Aruch, like the Re, or at least leans towards Paskining like the Re, he seems to lean towards the Re, which would be a big enough thing in modern day court cases. Then we have to ask Dayanim what they do. We can't ask Dayanim what they do nowadays, because nowadays they don't really collect tzar anyway because of sugyas that we'll see on Daf Memal.
But this really isn't the... There's tzar immediately. She's just not feeling it. It's not that the tzar has come later.
That's a philosophical...
Correct. So there's three assumptions of this Re, I would say. One in Mitzias, one in like the borderline between them, and one in pure din. The assumption of Mitzias is that the Hana'ah, you know, cancels out the tsar in her feelings. Then the next assumption is, and we take that into account halakhically and view that as not having tsar. And the third assumption is, and the tsar later is a grump. So you're right, those are all assumptions. I don't know if I would agree with any of the three of them if I had never seen such a Tosfos. But that's the tremendous, tremendous chiddush of the Ri. And again, the chiddush here is less tremendous because it's more of a theoretical discussion, etc. But the chiddush for all of Chol B'Chaveiro is could be an achdamina of millions of dollars in a real life court case. You know, easily could be an achdamina of $1 million.
The question is how you can, not just here, but how you can learn from it from where it is really a Brahman, it really comes later. But clearly here it was.
Right, correct. Enochnami, it is a tremendous chiddush. Obviously, he assumes canceled out pain is not pain because pain is defined subjectively, which maybe we'll come back to.
What do you say about Nezek? Like, was that what that. You say the same thing?
That's a fascinating question, right? I cut your arm, whatever, and like there's no permanent damage done, right? Maybe a little scar, so.
I'm talking about even
the chavot. I owe you $20 for making a little scar, and then it gets infected, and they have to amputate your arm. And now that's worth, you know, $1 million. So, lowly. So, you know, would the Ri also say I'm potter? Maybe. I don't know. Yeah, sure. I don't know how far to take that. I'm not sure how well easily this translates into like regular mazik of like property, because there's only, you know, tsar there. It's either something's broken or it isn't, but maybe you can think of something. Okay, this is a tremendous chiddush of the Ri, tremendous chiddush.
It's definitely drama doesn't relate to other dramas, right?
What?
I mean, there's a big question by like drama and like Shabbos about time difference being a drama.
Right, the relation between Grumma and Shabbos and Bava Kamma. Okay, we could get into Grumma way too much, and then, you know, we start to discuss current events, etc., and then it's lunchtime. But, so we're not going to. The relation between Grumma and Shabbos and Grumma and Nezikin is a big question. It's dealt with explicitly in Bava Kamma Daf Samach, where they say, how come, they ask, why, if I have a torch and the wind, what is it called when the bellows like make the fire bigger? There's a word for that in English. When the wind makes the fire burn, the wind makes the fire burn and then burns down your crops. I'm potter because of Grumma, but one of the 39 malachas is when I throw my wheat and chaff up into the wind and the wind separates the wheat from the chaff, I'm chayim. That's one of the 39 malachas. So what's the difference between them? So the Gemara has different answers, but the Maskana seems like Rav Ashi, very fascinating answer. Meleches machsheves asper Torah. Meaning Grumma in Nezikin has a more physical getter. Did you directly or indirectly do it physically? Grumma in Shabbos might have a more social getter. If it doesn't really matter if you did it directly or not. It matters, is this a way that people intelligently do things or not? Which again could affect a lot of these discussions that are going on now with dating card events, but not for now. Okay, let's get back to our sugya. So, the Ri has one problem. He says the reason why it's not talking about bringing the basulim is because that's only begrumma, which is based on a lot of assumptions. I admit. The Rosh Rishans has a much simpler answer. Now, the Rosh Rishans has a much simpler answer. He says, obviously it can't mean the pain of breaking the basulim. Because the pain of breaking the basulim is the same in any context. Meaning breaking the basulim is like an objective injury, right? Something's actually cut, right? That pain is the same in a nice context and in a bad context, right? That's an actual, you know, that's an actual wound. And therefore, it's pasha to them that you're putter for the pain of breaking the basulim, because that would have to happen anyway when she got married. Again, let's assume for now that she's going to get married, right? All Jewish mothers would want us to approach Shas with that assumption, that she's going to get married. That's called chash gufna, right? There's a Gemara in Bava Kamma, which has a machlokes, about whether hashina look chash gufna or not. What that means is, when I have to pay you damages, there it's in the context of just masik, not chovel. Do I take into account the fact, do I pay you, you know, gross damages, I guess, or net damages? Do I pay you by what I damaged or what I damaged minus the money you saved because I damaged you? The question there is, if we assume, like the Tanoim, that if I don't know the English words for agriculture so well, that if I damage your partially grown grapes, I'm sure there's English words for the different stages of growth of grapes that they discuss, but I don't know them, I have to pay you the price of a fully grown grape. That's one sheet in Bava Kamma. So they say, though, however, kechash gufna, the weakening of the vine, I have to pay you the price of a fully grown grape. But until the grape grew, it would weaken the vine a little. Right? It would use up nutrients and weigh down on the vine. So I shouldn't, let's say the fully grown grapes that I damaged are worth $1,000. But it would have caused $15 of wear and tear to your vines, meanwhile. So therefore I only have to pay you $985, because I can subtract the amount you're saving because I damaged you. That's called kash gufna. So there's a machlokes tanan, whether we do take into account kash gufna or we don't, right? Do we take into account the fact that you are saving future damage when I pay you now or not? So what does Rashi Mishnah say? The Ri says that if you ask, you know, why not tsar of hasharas besulem, the tsar of breaking the besulem? So at first they say, because that's going to have to happen to her anyway, right? That's something objective. It happens anyway. The Ri doesn't like that, so one answer is, let's go to the other answer, the Rosh Mishan, right? That Rashba, of course, is not the Rashba, sorry, Rashba, finish your Rashba, is the Rosh Mishan, who we actually have as Tosus, he says there. The Rosh Mishan says, because Sofa Litzair Tachas Bala, the Ri doesn't like that, he says, it's Machlokas Tanarim, whether we take into account what will be at the end or not. So if it's a machlokes tanoim, then maybe the Ri says back to him. Says the Ri, about ulai masnit tano de masnisen sovar lo chashinon lekash gufna. Maybe the Tana of our Mishnah lo chashin lekash gufna. So therefore, maybe it can be the Tsar breaking the Basulim, and he doesn't take into account what would have happened later and what you save later on. But the Rashba answers himself. The Rash answers this question. He says no. Our Mishnah doesn't just say onus pay Tsar. It says a mafata doesn't pay Tsar. Why does a mafata not pay Tsar? A mafata doesn't pay Tsar because whatever he does to her now is going to happen to her when she gets married. Anyway, so he says, Hoel umefate potter mitzar de hasharas besulim. Therefore, muchach de masnisen savra chayshina lekashkof. Now, that's actually a very good pshat, this Rosh Mishnah. He says, look, obviously our mission doesn't take into account what's going to happen later, because otherwise, why is it a fata potter? Right? If Tsar of Basula happens to a fata also, so why is he potter? Actually, it would happen later. So therefore, it shows that we take into account what happened later, so what are the owners paying for? It has to be something that won't happen later, can't be a short Basula. That's the Rosh Mishan. The Ri says a little differently. The Ri says no, because Tsar Bia Hashur's Basulim is called Grumma because it only comes later. We see people are sick for days in bed. Yeah, later, but at the time they felt okay. That's his speculation. Okay. Now, this is very interesting, the Havmina. I think we want to figure out what is the maskana. What's the maskana? Limaskana, what is the... I would point out, by the way, there's a very clever pshat here, Ben Nesivas, in his Sefer Beis Yaakov that I put in brackets. He has a third pshat as to why we can't be talking about Ashuras Basulim. He says, anyone know how we measure tsar? How do we measure tsar? What does the Gemara say? First of all, the Gemara doesn't say, how much money would I have to pay you in order to convince you to endure that tsar? Right? Because that's not fair. Like, no one's going to take money and endure the tsar. Right? A fairer measure is, how much money would you pay to avoid the tsar? Right? Then you're really thinking about it logically, not just emotionally. How much money would you pay to avoid the tsar? Now, what does it mean how the Gemara says, how do you know how much money you would pay to avoid the tsar? Let's say I cut off your hand. Right? Classic example there. I cut off your hand. So how much money would you pay to avoid having your hand cut off? What do you mean, tsar? You want your hand, right? That's nezek, that's not tsar. How do we measure how much money you would pay for tsar? Right? How do we measure tsar? It's not how much money you'd pay to not have me cut your hand off. Because that's nezek. Exactly. It's, if I was cutting your hand off anyway, and say the melech was gozer to cut your hand off, how much money would you pay for the anesthesia? Right? Or to use a sam instead of a scythe, how much money would you pay for the anesthesia to avoid this pain? And then you could have a realistic, you know, if your hand's going to get cut off anyway, how much money do you pay for the anesthesia? You for sure pay $10, $20, $30, $40, $50. You wouldn't pay $1 million. How much would you pay? Okay, so someone who's an expert has to go and figure out. So it says in Yaakov, he said,
it's what you're calling the sum?
No, that's not what I'm just using a contemporary example. When the Gemara said sam, they didn't mean anesthesia, they mean to use a drug which would cut it off without pain.
Make it immobile.
Right. Now, so it says the yeshiva is, how do you measure tsar? The only way you pay tsar is you measure, well, how much would you pay to have this done in a painless way instead of in a painful way? The only problem, that works well for a hand. That works well for a lot of things. The only problem is, again, I shouldn't have brought an anesthesia because that ruins his shot. They didn't have anesthesia back then. There's some things you can do painfully or painlessly. The problem is breaking the mesulim, there's only one way to do, right? There is no other way to do it, like the bias mesula. There is no other way to do it painlessly like there is for some of these other things. There are two ways to do it, right? It's a bia. There's only one way to do bia, and that has a certain tsar involved if she's breaking the basulim. And therefore he says, maybe the tsar can't be breaking the basulim because that's not a tsar that fits into the categories of chazal. Chazal only said tsar if the nezek could be done painlessly or painfully. But since over here, the nezek can't be done painlessly, therefore there's no way to measure the tsar and it doesn't fall into the category of tsar. Okay, it's a bit of a technical hesber. That's what he wants to say, that, you know, you can't, the category of tsar, or at least is it tsar b'makom nezek. You only pay tsar b'makom nezek if the nezek could have been done painlessly and you were measuring how big the tsar is. Over here, there's no way of measuring the tsar. Okay, technical explanation. Now, let's figure out what's the maskana. I want to know what's the maskana. Maskana of the Gemara is in the maskana, what's the tsar? In the maskana, what's the tsar? So, what is the maskana? Tosus seems to assume what's the maskana verse. So, okay, what's the tsar of the maskana? Is it the tsar of breaking the Mesulim? It's a maskana piece of bread line, right? So, what Shan and Tosus definitely seems to be, the posture of Shan and the Gemara, sort of seems to be, right? Tosla seems to assume this. And this is the simple shot of the Gemara. Tsar Pisuk Reglayan, meaning before the actual Bia and the Besulim is broken, right? The Tsar of the beginning of the process before he actually breaks the Besulim and does the Maisa Bia. That's the Pisuk. Tsar Pisuk Reglayan. That seems to be the tsar we're talking about, the maskana, and that's a tsar that an ones has and a fata doesn't, because it's really not such a big deal. So if not in the context of ones, then it's very painful. If done in the context of a ratzon, then it's not painful at all, or hardly, I should say, rather.
Could this be talking about a psychological tsar? The fact that she's getting attacked.
It sounds more like physical, but although the borderline is very fine, right? Because obviously one affects the other, and maybe that's, you know, part of it is the onus of ratzon, although it doesn't have to be. Now, however,
in that case, you could say the tsar comes much afterwards too, since the psychological.
Perhaps. It's very hard to get a clear grip on this. However. The Tosos Rush, the Shiva Gretz points out, if you look at the Lashon Tosos Rush, he seems to say that, do I have a Tosos Rush here? He starts out, he's almost exactly the same as Tosos. But he says here, and he says, don't they know that it's the Be'ilas Besula, the first Be'ya? And then he brings down the Re and the Rashba. And then he says, then they want to say Tsar Shachavata, and they're not the Tsar Pisuk Reglayim. then they say, oh, then mefuta nami. So at the very end he says, umishani rav nachman tsar shel biya. Mefuto sein lan tsar. He starts out with biya, he goes to pesach reglayim, mishani rav nachman tsar shel biya. He makes it sound like rav nachman is saying it's not pesach reglayim anymore. It's the actual biya, the actual breaking of the psulim. And what's rav nachman's chiddush? So says the, Mashmas of the Tosos Rosh, no, it's the Tzar of Biyoding, Hasharas Basulim, right? Breaking of the Basulim. Meaning, we had this Havamina of Piece of Raglayim, we had this Havamina of Piece of Raglayim, but really it's not this thing called Piece of Raglayim, that was just the Havamina, we thought it was Piece of Raglayim. Really, it's not Piece of Raglayim. Really, in the end, we come down to whoever speaks last in the Sugya, which is Rav Nachman. The same Rav Nachman.
Three times.
Right? The same Rav Nachman in the end, which is funny that in the end he says something. Really, he means Bia, which is what it sounds like from the Rosh when he says, Rav Nachman says, Bitzar shall Bia. Like, why doesn't he say Piece of Raglayim? Maybe the Rosh is hinting that he's going back to the Bia and not the Piece of Raglayim. It seems to be a strong Diyuk, like not a crazy Diyuk. Like, if you're reminded in the words of Tosas Rosh, seems to be where he's going. The Yamshel Shlomo here makes a big deal of this and says, forget about the Tosas Rosh. He says, look at all of the, forget about the Tosas Rosh, he says. Look at all the poskim. What did the Rambam say? How did the Rambam evaluate the Tsar? Anyone know which parts of this Shaklataria that we just read does the Rambam bring down? This whole Shaklataria, from the Mishnah till here. Which parts of the Shaklataria does the Rambam bring? It's a trick question. The answer is none. He doesn't discuss Chavata, Piece of Goliath, this, that. We read this Rambam once, although in a different context. The Rambam doesn't say anything. What does he say? He says, let me just find it here, I'm sorry. Tsar, Lefi Katnuso, Binyan Gufo, Lefi Shana, Gufo, Shana, Gufo. Tsar depends on how small she is and how young she is and how big he is and how old he is. Om, then, Tama Rose, Legion, Lot Tsar, WWE, and figure out how much someone would pay to avoid this Tsar, and that's the amount. He doesn't specify anything, right? He just says, oh, you figure out the Tsar based on, you know, the physical proportions. Okay, the Rambam doesn't say anything, then obviously what he's saying is, obviously, if the Rambam doesn't say anything, obviously, Pashtunites is general. If he meant only this hard moment and not that moment, he should have said so, right? If he meant only piece of Gerglion, not the actual Bia, it would be a very funny thing for him to say. Oh, you just figure out how much it would be worth to avoid this Tsar based on how big he is. What do you mean? Shouldn't he tell us? No, I only mean the Tsar, like, before the Bia, not during the Bia. No, if he says Stam, it sounds like Stam. The Yamshel Shlomo is a very nice Diyuk. The Rambam sounds like, if in the end, it's all Tsar. It's not just Tsar of a specific stage. And then he says the same thing. I mean, I think it's even a Mukhrach Diyuk about the Rif. What does the Rif bring down from this Shaklataria we just read? Take a guess. How many words does the Rif bring down from all the Gemara we just read? Zero. He skips to the next Gemara. Tsar is Tsar. What do you need a whole discussion? Ah, you have a whole discussion. So the Rif and Rambam, they're writing the Maskat. No. Everyone knows in Talmudic literature, you have a whole discussion about a lot of things. That's the derech of Iyun of Torah of Shaklataria. But the question is, what's the maskana? The maskana, there's no need for discussion. What do you need for discussion? Tsar is tsar. I thought of all kinds of strange things. The maskana, tsar is tsar. So this is plus Rambam and Rif, right? Kefisha Diek. In the Yamshel Shlomo right here, as well as in the Parol Sugin Baba Kama, where they quote this in Sugin Chashkofna. That was a very nice, I didn't think of it when I wrote the Makoros. But it's true, like, if it meant like Tosfos, only piece of Gerglion, not the actual Bia. Not the thing you get sick from for days. Only the, like, uncomfortableness before the actual breaking of Sulin Bia. Then the Rambam and Rif should have said so. You can't write a halacha book and leave that fact out. If it meant, no, the whole thing, like whatever tsar, the maskana, all this is irrelevant, the maskana tsar is tsar, then it makes sense that you don't have to go into detail. So this seems to be a significant number of Rishonim who the maskana say that it's not just limited piece of Gerglion. It's really, it's not just limited piece of Berglayan, it's really the entire Bia, including the breaking of the Basulin. This L'chora also, even though the Pashup shot in the Gemara is that they're going to something called Pisuk or Glayan, which they need a specific Pasuk for, but on the other hand, when they all quote it, what about the fact? What was Tosa's problem? What's the problem with this? Two questions, if you take this approach. First question is that the Gemara says piece of Reglayim. Doesn't the Gemara say piece of Reglayim and not say the bring of Sulam and the Bia? So the Shivan Gretz already made the Duke of the Rush, right? So what do you answer? Either say that the last line, what's his last line? The Pikosh of the Hen, say that the last line changed their mind. Right? It was piece of Reglayim until the last line, as the Rush says, Umishani Rav Nachman Tzar shall be umfutei l'tzar. That's the Shikim Rebetz, this is Diuk in the Rush. They thought piece of Reglayim in the first statement of Rav Nachman, but in the next statement of Rav Nachman, he changed his mind. This is the Shikim Rebetz, the Das Tosos Rush, or, even though I don't have a good writer for this, and then I'm sorry, you'll see, or say, Pisuk Reglayim means Bia, right? Which is against the basic assumption of Tosfos that our sugya is omitting Bia, but it could be Pisuk Reglayim just means Bia. Pisuk Reglayim is a euphemism for Bia. That's, as I said, a tip you might think. I mean, Pisuk Reglayim is used elsewhere, you should know, in all right, this is a little obscure. But in Tyros, when it comes to Zavim, etc., they talk about Pisuk Reglayim, do you sit on a chair straight, or do you sit on a stool with Pisuk Reglayim? And that has all kinds of, discussions they have there. So you might have thought Pisuk Reglayim just means, riding a horse the regular way, instead of side saddle, right? I don't remember the second beginning of Pesachim. So to clarify, you should know Pisuk Reglayim is a word for sexual relations. They quote about Tipsky as Raglai Chol Ovir. But Pisuk Reglayim doesn't mean a specific stage of sexual before the relations. Pisuk Reglayim just is a euphemism for whatever happens in the context of a sexual encounter. And therefore it means the Ikar Bia breaking the Basulim. This is fundamentally different than Tosfos' whole Mahalif in the Sugya. But if the Yamsha Shlomo is right, that the Rif and the Rambam, and then you start looking through all the other Rishonim in the Sugya, and it's hard to prove either way what they thought about these things. It's hard to prove what they thought about these things either way. But if you assume that everyone disagrees with Tosfos and says, the Mastani, you're paying for the Tzar, the Etzem Bia, the Etzem Breaking the Basulin, the regular Tzar, then what about the Gemara? So either you have to say the second line of Rav Nachman changed his mind from the first line of Rav Nachman, was what the Shita Gevetz is Medayik, a reasonably Medayik, in the changing wording of the Tosfos Rush. But that's not all dachuk. It might be less dachuk to just say that's what Pisuk Reglayim meant all along. Pisuk Reglayim. At first they thought Chavatel Gavi Parka, and then they thought it meant the Bia. Okay, Tap Nirlin Yizdaiti. I looked around. Most people don't discuss this. Some of the obscure Achronim say, it must be Pisuk Reglayim means Bia, not like Tosfos assumed. But I don't have anyone famous who says that explicitly.
I saw it somewhere, but I don't remember where. They discussed specifically Solashim Kia.
Okay.
The Tosfos Rush was the Rash's answer, and we know that this Tana holds like this because by Mefuta there is no.
Mm-hmm.
But Maisi also quotes Rav Nachman, who concludes that by Mefuta there is no Tzar. Right, so if he's talking about Tzar Hashem's Besulim, then there's a.
It doesn't bother me to say that by the end of the Gemara they changed their mind about Metzius. Why didn't that bother me? Is that something where it sounds like they brought people who brought Adios from their wives to change their mind about Tzias?
But I think from the Lashon he says Tzardia. I don't know why we're limiting Tzardia to Hashem's Besulim. I mean, rape is painful, no?
So okay, fair enough. I don't mean to limit it. What I mean to say is it's the same moment, so it has to go together. Meaning, I don't mean to say it's limited. I mean, it includes. I didn't mean to say limited, I meant including Asher Besulah.
If she is not a Besulah, the Chora, then Anas should pay Tzar either way, no?
Correct. So what I will, Would it make you feel better? I'm not doing this to make you feel better. I'm trying to be accurate in the way it will make you feel better. Right? I mean, not be inaccurate to make you feel better.
You're avoiding sarfen?
If I just wrote, including Asharas Basulin, that would be better. Because you're right. That's what I would have meant to say if I was being more careful with, you know, Tsar, Bia, and Asharas Basulin. You know, it's just, they come at the same time, but you're right. Bia couldn't have Tsar without Asharas Basulin. We're just not discussing it in this context, because that's not the kind we're talking about of Basula, so it happens not come out what would happen. Okay, now, I would just have one more question. Number one, Tosa's Medayik in the Gemara. How did Tosa start? Where did Tosa start denying it's about the Bia itself? This Chiddush, that the Tsar is not actually in the Bia. How did he get started there? He says, well, first we start with Chavata. Why not start with the Bia? And we don't even end with the Bia. We end with Piece of the Lion. Where's the Bia? Okay, so as far as that question, where you start, Havni is always easier, meaning to say that, well, the Havni started with Chavata, you thought something, but even the Maskana, we say, it's Piece of the Lion. So either we said they changed their mind from Pisuk Revayin Laskana, or that's what Pisuk Revayin means against Tosos. But it sounds like the even stronger question of Tosos was from a fact, Metzias. What's the Metzias? The Metzias is, Tsar can't mean the Tsar of B.O.Y., because the Gemara says, Mefutos and married women on the wedding night don't have it. And we see that married women on the wedding night do have it, right? The Gemara says that Bas Rav Chista and Bas Abba Surra and Amrli Aim, they have eyewitness testimony. That, even better than eyewitness testimony, testimony of my own feelings, right? Cartesian testimony. That if there is no tsar, that the kind of tsar we're discussing doesn't happen to a married woman who is doing it baratzo. But Tosa says, but we see with our own eyes that it does happen to a married woman. And therefore he says, we must be talking about different tsars. So let me just say this in a question form. If tsar means tsar bia, how can the Gemara say Mefuta has no tsar when we see that she does have tsar? Right? Remember, the Gemara's conclusion, there's no tsar from a futa. That's how it works out. And the fata didn't pay anything because it didn't hurt the chlal. And an ones pays because it did hurt, and it wouldn't have hurt later when she got married, because that would have been nice. And therefore, he has to pay. Again, it's a chachamim. We're not analyzing from Shimon. Maybe not even today. But Tos says it's against the reality. The reality is that Tamet Ketanos Cholos Mizah. So how do you deal with the reality? So that is what the Shiva Gubetzis deals with. So I have, again, you could think if you only listen to today's shiur that I'm on some sort of agenda to like be against Tosos all the time. No, just this particular Tosos. I have questions on. You could say that Tosos is wrong in the Metzias. He saw with his own eyes. So you could say that, okay, maybe in Tosos's cultural, environmental context, for some reason the girls had a certain feeling. But in the days of Chazal and the other Rishonim, no, maybe the Ketanos weren't Cholos Mizo. You never know. Maybe, I don't know, there's some environmental factor that made it more dangerous in Tosos' time, or maybe it was just cultural. You know, a lot of things are cultural, whether they heard or not. So in Tosos' days, yeah, people were laid up in bed and they couldn't move for days afterwards because of the trauma. That's cultural. In the days of Chazal, maybe they felt very fine the whole time. Again, hard for us to judge from our days, because besides the fact we have to go and ask a lot of women awkward questions, but again, our women get married, they're 20, 25, and so of course you can't bring any proofs as to what they would have happened if they were 11 or 12. Obviously, physically it's very different. So I don't know, I don't have any basis for judging. Even if I asked every woman, you know, is it very painful, I wouldn't get a very relevant answer, because at least in the circles I travel in, they weren't 12. Okay. There are villages nearby, maybe. I can do a little field work. not worth... I'm all in favor of the Siris Nefesh for Torah, but not on Kedai Kach.
We'll go to a lot of Timoniot from the little bit older generation.
It's a lot older generation. In any case, what do you have to answer? You have to answer, what do you have to say? Either you have to say that Tosfos was wrong about the Metzias. That was what he saw happening in his places, but that wasn't the general Metzias in other times and places. You have to say Tosfos, again, Tosfos not going to lie. Obviously, he said he saw with his own eyes. But it could be that was in his culture, the way people expressed things and felt. But that wasn't true in the days of Chazal. Right? So either say Tosfos's observations were not true, right, in the time of Chazal. And so I know Tosfos would say, you have a weird country, your Ktanos or Cholos Mizu, I don't know what we would do. I'm talking about normal in the Gemara when no Ktanos or Cholos Mizu. Or, of course, that's not going to help for the Tosfos Rush. Because the Tosfos Rush, he has Metzias. If he himself says we change our mind, go to Tzarbias, but he himself had that assumption. Or say like the Shittim Gubetzes. Or, like the Shittim Gubetzes says for the Tosfos Rush, right? He's not going to say, you know what the real answer for the Tosfos Rush? No, it's Tanos Aron Kolos Mizah. No, the Tosfos Rush himself was Tosfos. He said they were. So what does he say? He says a big chish and makes a diuk in one word in the Gemara. What's the one word he likes to make a diuk in here? Pikos. Pikos Shebehem Omros. It's so fascinating. Pikos Shebehem Omros. The smart ones say, right? Mefuta in Latzar. The smart ones say Mefuta in Latzar. What's the diuk? The diuk is, but the not so smart ones disagree. So you could have said, no, the smart ones say this, because they really thought about it and investigated, and the not so smart ones just repeat a rumor they heard from someone else and are telling us useless knowledge. So that's what I would have read. I read a look at the Pikos. You ask the Pikos, you get the truth. Other people tell you what their sister-in-law told them they heard once from someone about a terrible story, and I don't know what's that, you know, especially when it comes to issues that have to do with more private, intimate matters. Lots of people believe all kinds of rumors. So the Pikos means normal people as opposed to liars. And hostile, not that the masses lie on purpose, but the masses lie because they just embellish stories.
One of them broke down the Gemara about that he knew how to do.
That's it. That's the Shittim Gubetzes.
They know what to do.
Exactly. Said the Shittim Gubetzes. Pikos doesn't mean the right answer as opposed to the wrong answer. Pikos means, let me parse it a little differently. Pikos say a mafuta doesn't have tzar. You could have read this as the Pikos say every mafuta doesn't have tzar. And don't believe the stupid people who think a mafuta doesn't have tzar. The Pikos say every mafuta doesn't have tzar. Says the Shittim Gubetzes, no. The Pikos say a pikachas mafuta doesn't have tzar. The Pikos say our kind, if I was mafuta, I don't have tzar. When I got married, I didn't have tzar because I'm a pikachas. Meaning all the Pikos don't have tzar, but what's the opposite of Pikos in a way that's not so insulting? A tip show, that's not so insulting. I hate to know it's insulting. Okay. The tip show's fine. The tip show's, not the tip, the tip show say, and the Pikos say actually, say why. The Pikos actually don't have tzar. Kamaya Chamimi and Kanema Kushi, the tip shows actually do have tzar. Why? Because as, I said back, I think maybe to Morty, psychological tzar or physical tzar, when it comes to these things and possibly all things, it's the psychological tzar contributes to the physical tzar, right? If you're in the right psychological frame of mind, then even the physical, you don't have tzar. If you're in the wrong psychological frame of mind, then it's even goring to physical tzar because of how you feel and because of how you react. And that's it. The Pikos, they know how to have this be a Rishona in a way that it doesn't hurt at all because they're in control and they know how to, you know, how to feel and they know how to comport themselves, etc. Well, the tipshos, when the wedding night, the pikos don't have tzar at all. The tipshos do have tzar on the wedding night, even in mafuta, because they don't really know how to control their bodies and their feelings as well and how to comport themselves and in a way that it won't be physically painful. Okay, that's not a nice shot in the Gemara. What he does with this is a chiddush, though. He says, and therefore, if a woman has tzar in the bia, whose fault is it? It's her fault. Now, okay. Someone could easily say, I don't like that last. I'm not talking political correctness. I just mean in terms of logic. Someone could easily say, I don't like that last step. Ana chanami, the victim, could have been better and not had tzar, or could have handled themselves worse, or herself worse, and had tzar. But either way, it's the perpetrator's fault. Like, he should have just minded his own business and never gotten into this. You know, so it's a big chiddush. Again, I don't mean big chiddush because we're politically correct. Just logically, it's a chiddush. Lamaisa, I should have minded my own business and you mind your own business and nothing would have happened. Once I already assault you, so it's your fault because you don't react as well? That's a chiddush. I wouldn't have said that on my own learning Bava Kamma. But that's what Shin Gubetza says. That anachronic Thomas Kolis Mizo, because they're tip shows. But if they would have been pinkos, they got bad advice. But if they would have gotten good advice of how to comport themselves on the wedding night, then no one would ever feel any tsar, or sorry, no one feel any more tsar than the bread and the hot water and the bloodletting if they know how to comport themselves. Therefore, it's not his fault, responsibility to pay tsar. It is her responsibility. Again, talking about Mafate. In Ones, no, she has no choice how to comport herself. Ones pays tsar because what do you mean how she comports herself? She has no say in the matter. She's not in control at all. So the Ones pays tsar because even a pikachas, if she's nen, so will suffer. I mean, she's not in any control. We're only talking in the realm of Mafate, though, where Katanos should get married. That's when it makes a difference between a pikachas or a tipeshet. And therefore, what does he say? He says that a mefuta pikachas has no tsar. So, any tsar of a mefuta, any tsar of the mefuta from the bia is her own fault. And again, you know, you're right, it's not blaming the victim of an onus. Onus, we admit that no amount of pikos will help her due to the situation. But at least they mafuta, so even though Tosas Havina was, no, girls get married and their husband is better than mafata them. He marries them and gives a whole wedding party and gets a nice apartment, and nonetheless it hurts. Doesn't that prove that a mafata is sarfin bia? No, that just proves that a silly mefuta as the mefuta sar for the bia, but a good mefuta, a smart mefuta, doesn't have like all these rebbetzins mentioned in the Gemara, and therefore halachically a mefuta doesn't have sar for bia because it's not his fault.
But really, to answer this thing about, you know, saying that it's their fault, you have to tie it together with the fact of that it's not just here; it's the concept of that later on she would have it also. The mefuta, any mefuta, is not going to be in control totally. She's not going to be prepared. The question is can you relate to having the tsar later? A pikacha is not going to have a tsar later.
Okay,
so
at
now,
least later, fair enough.
Now you can't.
Okay, one could say that. I mean, I guess one could, you know, question your assumptions of Metzias. I don't know, there's mefutos and there's mefutos.
If we distinguish between tsar bia and hasharas besulim, then the whole thing is not problematic, because on the hasharas besulim, you could say that, like, the rash that's sukkah is tsar. And the only tsar that we're discussing here is the tsar bia that's the result of rape. And then, the mefuta doesn't have that tsar. Every other tsar that mefuta does have, that's sofa that's died.
I mean, what you're sounding is if I can even maybe take that, I mean, these are, I hear what you're saying. The problem is just technically, if the two things are at the same time, right, it's hard to separate them, right? Meaning the bia is what's made sure the sulam, and the hara is a halosh, and bia is made sure the sulam. But maybe what you're saying is that, tell me if this isn't what you meant, but tell me if this is okay. Tell me if I'm kona b'shvachli or not. That maybe that's what the Gemara means by Pisuk Raglayim, and that's really the Maskon and Tosas Rush, you could say. That what he meant is Sarbia as opposed to Asharis Basulim, and maybe that's even within the Gemara's Lashon of Pisuk Raglayim, and you don't have to say they changed their mind. I don't know, maybe that's going further than you want to. But I hear the time. Okay.
So what, John, do you think? That there is the Archos there or not? How do you think the sugya is ending up?
Basically, there are two ways the sugya is ending up. One way the sugya is ending up is the Rambam and the Rif, all tsar. Right? One way the sugya is ending up is the Rambam and the Rif, all tsar. The other way the sugya is ending up is Tosfos, only one part of the tsar, called piece of Berglayim. Yosef suggests that within the Tosfos Rash, and the Shidduch Metzes, you know, or way I understood the Shulchan Aruch from one way, you could take it perhaps another way, and I'll leave that as something which is worthy of the unit for now. Okay, this is the Maskana of the Sugya. Now let's just try to understand some of the Shakla V'Tayra. I just thought it's important, you know, to get the Maskana down, to know actually what we what the halachic concept is in the end.
With regard to the Pikos, what's the objection of the Gemara to that is V'alchat Hasina De'itluch? They're not denying that the Pikos don't have Tzah. Maybe they're saying, but nevertheless, it has Tzah.
But Chazin the Isla?
Yeah.
So now, okay, the Maskana might be, but everyone sees there is, and they say, yeah, but it's very small, and it's not Shavutruta.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that might be the simplest way of reading Gemara. Don't we see there is? Yeah, but the Pikos say it's so small that it's not, you know, it's not something you could sue for. I think the way the Shulchan Betzes might say is, don't we see there is? Yeah, but the Pikos know there isn't, and therefore, you know, if there is, it's the girl's fault. At least in the case of Pitoy, which is maybe not even so politically correct. After all, it's not a case of all, it's a case of Pitoy. Maybe it is her fault if she suffers Tsar. She did agree in the first place. Okay, now let's just try to read through some of the Shakla V'Tayra in the Gemara. So let's go back to this difficult Tosfos, Ihachi Mefuta Navi. This Tosfos is exceedingly difficult. You can tell it's exceedingly difficult. That's why there's a long Marashah and there's a long Sheet of Rebetzis and everyone else in the entire world. Let's just try to understand this line in the most basic way, and hopefully we'll understand more or less what Tosfos is trying to say. There's this question in the Gemara. What's the question in the Gemara? It comes right after we say Pisuk or Glayim, right? The Gemara says Sa'ar equals Sa'ar Pisuk Reglayim. Then the Gemara's question is Ihachi Mefuta Nami. Okay, there are 2 to 3 ways of interpreting, or no, let's say there's, what's the pshat in this question? I don't want to start with Tosfos. I want to start before Tosfos. Like, I want to start with what Tosfos wrote. I want to start with what Tosfos thought before he wrote. What's the pshat of this question? Just what do the words say? Right? What does the question mean? I think the simple pshat of the question is Mefuta Nami what? What? Okay, you're Tosfos. Ihachi Mefuta also has Tsar Pisuk Reglayim. Okay. Fine. Seder. One way is what Tosfos says. Tosfos says, Ihachi Mefuta Nami Yesh La Tsar. We're not saying a din here, right? It's not a halacha. It's a metzias. And what's the problem with that metzias? That it's a kasha from a metzias on a on the Mishnah? That's not what Tosfos says.
I'm not saying Tosfos. You asked for pshat in the question.
Ah, okay. So then what you meant to say is this. I apologize. Okay. What Yaakov meant to say is this. Is that Ihachi Mefuta Yesh Latzar, and halachically therefore? Exactly. And the Mefatish have to be Tsar, because he's making her Tsar. And what's that a question? That's a question on, let's go with Masnisin for now, even though the Marsha has reasons for saying Masnisa. Pashup shot, usually when you have Masni, Chokchek, it's Masnisin. So, the Kasha, Al HaMishnah, Shef Katra Mefate Mitzar, right? Mefate page 3. And the onus pays 4. Okay, that is, I think that's the Pashup Shah. Good, I was hoping. And who says that in Tosos? Which part of Tosos says that?
When he denies it.
No. That's the very end. Tzas Nira, the Tosos is shun, right? It says in the side, Kafyud, Tosos is shun, Ksav Yad. This is the Tosos is shun. This is also, I think, the mashmaus of the Ritva, and this is clearly how the Ramban starts out. I think that's what I put on the Koros mashmaus of the Ramban, and the Ritva, although the Ramban's going to make it more complicated. Why? That makes sense. Ihachi mefutanami, meaning she should also get tsar. Why does Tosfos, or am I right about this? No. Okay. Hold on. Ah, what's the problem with this?
Hold on.
Okay, what's the problem the Ramban has with this? What's the problem the Ramban has with this? Right? I mean, that's then if she had tsar, oh, the Mishnah, she doesn't, so it's a good kasha. And then the Gemara flows very well. Why doesn't she? Ah, she doesn't, because it's crushy ranch to be putter. Ah, it's the father's right, not hers. Ah, because Mefuta really doesn't have tsar. The Ramban's problem is that, how can you say Mefuta should...
One second.
Yeah. How can you say Mefuta should be tsar? She's going to have tsar later anyway. Right? How can you say Mefuta should be tsar? He's saving her from the tsar later when she gets married.
Let me read it to you in the Ramban. This... Okay, everyone's going to have to help me out here because I realize I'm already more complicated. It's already more complicated than I originally planned to lay it out. Ihachim futanami says Raman Kasha.
How can you think the question is of tsar? She's just going to have that tsar afterwards, right? You're giving her tsar now and saving from later. Why should you have to pay tsar? So, why isn't the answer obvious? Or, let's say better, says the Ramban, how can we even think that Mefata pays tsar if sofa hits ta'er tachas ba'ala? Like, how can the Gemara even have a half a mita that Mefata should be tsar? She's not getting more tsar, she's just getting tsar she would have had later anyway. So, there are probably many ways to answer this. Then what the Ramban says is, really we meant to ask, a miman of shach, right? is miman of shach. If we take sofa into account, ones and mifate are potter. And if not, then they're both chayev. That's how the Ramban reads it. He says, really the question is being mafatah. He says, then the mafatah should be chayev. And if you answer, no, the mafatah is potter, it will happen later, then the oneh should also be potter. That's how he reads the question of ihachi mefutanami. Of course, you could, that's how he reads the question of ihachi mefutanami. You could also have said that for some reason at this stage of the Gemara, we assume the Mishnah is not chayish lekash gufna. But that's, you know, that's basically seems to be saying the similar idea.
He seems to be holding that the B is the tsar, right?
He doesn't say. That's why I said, I think so. I think, but he doesn't say. I can't prove it.
Breaking the Bissoud is the tsar. It seems to be saying.
Ah, okay. What do you mean by that?
Well, because he's saving her, from that problem later on.
Exactly. That is a good point. What you could have answered is.
Why can't that just be your friend's piece of good line?
What?
Why can't that just be your friend's piece of good line?
No, he's talking about piece of good wine now. Right? That's the context. So he assumes piece of good wine only happens once, it sounds like, right?
It seems like it only happens once.
He assumes piece of good wine only happens once. Correct. His question assumes that piece of good wine only happens once, right? Because if... What would the Tosfos Yeshanim answer this question? Let's say better. Tosfos Yeshanim might say that, like Tosfos himself says, Pesach Reglayim happens every time. So, okay. Pesach Reglayim happens every time. That's what Tosfos holds, right? Pesach Reglayim happens every time. A few ulam, it's the Eretz Petach. The raya would be, but tifsiki is ragli v'chol over. Ah, piece. Now, it doesn't mean it's tzar, necessarily, but for the tefillah of the Ritva, maybe piece of galayim. So piece of galayim happens every time, then who cares if it's going to happen again? But it would have happened again anyway, right? If you're going to suffer 100 more times in your life, and now I make you suffer one extra time now, of course I'm chayiv. I'm only potter if I'm making you suffer now instead of suffering later. If I make you suffer now in addition to suffering later, of course I'm chayiv. Right? So, the tsa'ar now is in addition to later. Not instead of later. Okay, so these are, why do I think that's what Tosfos Yeshanim would say? Because he's coming after the line of Tosfos, who just says, even Be'ula, tsa'ar, Pesach Reglayim. So here we have Machlokes, Ramban, and Tosfos within Pesach Reglayim. Right? What does Pesach Reglayim mean? Right? Raglayim, for Tosfos, it's something that happens even to a Ba'ula. Even a Ba'ula has Tsar piece of Raglayim. But the Ramban says, no, it's only in the Bia Rishona, this Tsar piece of Raglayim. Tosfos says, piece of, every Bia has a Tsar piece of Raglayim. Right? I mean, the Hadmi in the Gemara is that every Bia hurts the woman. Because it's our piece of Raglayim. Okay, in the end, they say the Pitchkos say, I guess in the time of Chazal, you would say, there are many historical periods where all the women, a lot of the masses believe that every bia hurts the woman no matter how many times it is. And then the Pitchkos says, no, it's not really true. The Ramban says, no, piece of Raglayim is not to be Rishona. Does he mean that, you know, that seems to fit nicely with, that piece of Raglayim means the bia, unless you say no, even piece of Raglayim before the bia, but still only be Rishona that's traumatic afterwards. She's already looser, so I don't know. But certainly that would fit well for my suggestion that piece of Raglayim means the full mice of bia. This is one way of reading this funny question of Ihachi Mefutanami. Tosfos reads it as. How does Tosfos read it? And that's Pashup Shav in the Gemara. Tak, Zas, Nira, Damas, Nisen, Parach, Amai, Mefuta, Pater. No, they're asking, why is Mefuta, Pater? Who should have to pay? He makes her feel, Pater's pay, he makes her feel tsar. What about the fact that she feels tsar later anyway? Okay, either turn that into a Mefutashav or say, no, it's in addition to, not instead of. Tosfos, now let's try to read Tosfos inside, which is going to be exceedingly difficult. Before we read Tosfos inside, I know I'm reading Tosfos backwards. I hope you will forgive me. Because then I think there might be some small chance that I'll understand it. Maybe you already understand it, but I'm working on myself. And John, I'm sorry. Sorry, I'm going to need some help here. Let's deal with what the Gemara didn't say. The Gemara didn't ask. What did the Gemara not ask? The Gemara didn't ask. Why go to that now? Okay, forget that. Let's go to Tosfos. What does Tosfos say? I apologize. What does Tosfos say? Tosos says, before we get to the dodo, the Tosos says, Iachim futanami, yesh la tsar pisa gerglayim ko anusam. A futa is the same tsar pisa gerglayim as an anusam. But my ka'ara in doma develops for onus than develops for rutsam. And why does the Brisa say that Vels Ones is not the same? He's quoting the Brisa as the Elis Be'er Ratzon.
So this is already very different.
Tosa says, Ihachi Mefuta Nami Yesh La Sa'ar Vekasha Al HaBrisa Sha'amra Sha'ein Latzar, because it says the Vels Rus and the Vels Bonus are different. One is Tsar, one doesn't. So here it's a strictly Metzias question. It's not a halachic question at all, according to Tosos. It's a strictly Metzias question. And therefore, again, you look at the Marsha, you'll see why he says what he says, but let's assume Pashim Shat not. After all, he's quoting the line from the Brisa, and then Nori Rav Dodi says, not Amas Nisan. And then the Tosos says, maybe Amas Nisan. Clearly, it's Brisa versus Amas Nisan, it's the simplest job in all the other according to Tosos. what's not 100% clear to me is, and this is almost the exact same thing, by the way, as the Tosfos Yeshanim, right? The only difference is the Tosfos Yeshanim makes it into a halachic question, which would then become a question on the Mishnah. Halachically, if the Mefuta is Tsar, then the Mefuta should pay the Tsar, so why did the Mishnah say not? He makes it into a Metzias question, which is a question on the Brisa. If the Metzias that Metzias of a food that has tsar, which is against the price, that says Metzias and Udome, the Bell's bonus, Bell's brought, so she doesn't have tsar. Why did Tosos prefer to see it as a Metzias question and not like Tosos Yeshanim is not 100%, which is what all the Mepulim, the acronym here deal with, but is not 100% clear. Like Tosos makes it clear why they're not asking this question that the Rav Dodi points out that they're not asking. What? Did Tosos have something against Tosos Yeshanim? It sounded like Tosos saying no. Davka, I'm saying it's a Messias question on the Brisa, not a halachic question on the Mishnah. It's just not clear to me why Tosos did not like the Tosos Yeshanim shot. Was it just he felt that flow better in the Gemara? So this is not, if someone has a theory, they saw in one of the Achronim, Shiv Gumbetza, Marsha, anyone else, feel free to share if you can actually get it to work. Not clear to me. You know, sometimes not clear. You look in the acronym, it becomes very, very clear, and sometimes it just becomes like eight steps of logic, and you're still not clear. So my competitor sometimes leaves you to be honest with yourself. Not clear why Tosos preferred shot two. Shot one. Like, why do you refer to this thing as a question against Metzias LeBrice instead of a question against the halacha of the Mishnah is not clear to me. Or did he prefer? Did he just say, well, we're going on the Brisa, so we're talking about the Brisa, and really get nothing fundamental against the Tosfos Yeshanim? Or no, there's some fundamental machlokas, which is hard to tease out. Don't say, because they're a Banz Kasha, because Tosfos himself, all the piece of going happens every time, so that should not bother him. So I'm going to leave that a little bit to Tzarek Ian for now. I can think of speculations, but nothing that really satisfies us.
Could you tie this to the machlokas of who the Tsar goes, the money the Tsar goes to her, or to her father, for the Tsar of this? Because then you could say if the Tsar goes to him later on, so he could say, I don't care what's going to happen later. I'm losing money now because of the Tsar. I don't care what's going to happen later. But if you say that the Tsar goes to her, then it doesn't matter.
That is interesting. And I think maybe I'm sure someone like makes a whole cheshbon based on that. How about that specifically how about that specifically explain what we're discussing now though? What do you mean to say? I was listening to the basic idea, so I wasn't following the details.
Yeah, I thought that if you're going to worry over here about what's going to happen, Shita 1 is worrying about what's going to happen later to her also. But if you hold that he gets the money and later she would get the money, then that's not a relevant reason because you can't bring that in.
But then
you say, I'm losing money now. I don't care what's going to happen to her later. Then you have to go to over here.
The Gemara, if the question of the Gemara was, no, I don't think it's going to work. Okay, maybe we'll discuss it after Shir. Now, what the Gemara didn't ask is, what the Gemara didn't ask is, Ihachi ones ye potter. That's not the Gemara's question, right? The Gemara didn't ask, well, piece of Gemara, everyone has it, and therefore an onesh should be putter, right? Because that would be too much to read in the Gemara.
Somehow I think that question would have... That's part of the Taina, is that if it would have been... I can't figure out the stages. If it would have been from the Mishnah, that question would have come up. Now that it's from the Braita, that question doesn't come up. That's like the...
Clearly, that's the... tricky part here. Okay, let's read the Tosos Kaseder and then we'll leave out what's still starting to be. Let's try to understand Tosos on a very basic level. I'm sure we worked out on a deeper level, but let's. Yehachim Futanami Yishal Tarpis of Gagalayim, Kumo, and Nusa, and Futa is the same Tarpis of Gagalayim as in Nusa, but Micah Rain, Domin Velsman, and Rothen. That's against the Bryce, which says that they're different. But Amar Rover Moria of Gonizal. That they couldn't have asked a different question on the Mishnah, which is why is an onus chayiv if since everyone has tzar piece of mind, she would have had a tzar in the end anyway. That is not the question they asked. That is not a valid question. Why is that not a valid question? why is that not a valid question? And why is he using Amasnis and Nira Lanius Daiti? Again, assuming it's a Marsha, let's grant that for now, and for further. Like, it's only a question of the Tzias of the Braisa. It's not a question of the Etzim did in the Mishnah. Right? Why didn't the Gemara ask this more powerful question? Right? That's what the Moridodi is trying to explain. Why didn't they ask a more powerful question, not just against the Tzias of the Braisa? Why didn't they ask against the Din of the Mishnah? So, we have the same two answers. According to the Ramban, this is part of the Gemara's question. They did ask this question. Basically, according to the Ramban, they did ask this question. Remember how the Ramban used this question. If so, Mafata should pay tsar because she feels pain. And if you say she would have felt it anyway, then an ones shouldn't pay tsar because she's going to feel it later anyway. According to the Ramban, this is part of the Ramban's question. Whereas it's a dual question. If you go by taking into account what would happen later, the ones should be potter. And if you don't take into account what would happen later, the Mafata should be chayiv. So according to the Ramban, the Gemara is asking this question. According to the, Mori Harav Dodi, is that what he's called? Mori Harav Dodi in Tosos. He says, you know why the Gemara doesn't ask that question? Because even Ba'ula has Tsar Pisuk Raglayan, taking into account Yosef Sa'ara, even Ba'ula has Tsar Pisuk Raglayan, and therefore, this tsar is in addition to later, not instead of later, and obviously if you have tsar in addition to later, then that's not a tor. Tor is only tsar now instead of later. Tsar now add later, then of course, you are chayiv. And that's why the Gemara didn't ask this type of question. The one thing that I don't fully understand, and I'll give everyone one last chance to help me out here, and I'm sure the answer is someplace in all the Gepulim, the Achronim here, it's just hard to like get a clear havana of the like core answer, is what happens. Tos says it's a kash against this line, the metzias of the brisa, but it's not a well. Wait, I'm reading Tosos. You can fix it by reading Tosos differently. It's not a question against the Mishnah's being mechayiv and onus. No, there's no question why the Mishnah is mechayiv and onus, right? Rav Dodi explains why it's not a question. Not like Rabban says that was all the question along. The Rabban is very poshut. It's a question against the whole Mishnah. Mimad of Shach, either Fashim Chai or Hushim Potter, it's a question against everything we've said until now, very poshut, Shalom Yisrael. Tosfos says no, it's a question that sees the Brisa. Mori to Rav Dodi, it's not a question on the onus part of the Mishnah. And then the Tosfos Yishanim chimes in at the end and says, ah, but you know what? It's not a question on the onus of the Mishnah, but Taka could be a question in Halacha on the Mefata of the Mishnah. And now we're just not sure why Tosfos didn't say that in the beginning also. Like that's what's a little tzarech ion. If Tosfos Shanim is right, it can't be a kasha on the onus half of the Mishnah. It can be a kasha on the mafata half of the Mishnah. So why didn't he just start out saying it's a kasha on the mafata half of the Mishnah? Like why did he insist it's only a kasha on the metzias line of the brisa and not on the mafata half of the Mishnah? And here it's not 100% clear. There's different drachim, each of which has weaknesses, and we'll leave it at our basic havana without a full havana of Tosfos for now, because it could be that we're at the point subjectively, at least, of course, of Pelamos of Gorea. Now let's get to the most interesting part of the sugya. Okay, the most interesting part of the sugya, of course, is this one fasting. What's the most interesting part of the sugya? To me, now I know that I have the right answer, right, is this line, Krashi Rayin Shalivi Hipater. All the Rishonim are bothered by this line. What are they all bothered by? What's the havamina? The whole parrot, the money goes to her father. We don't know in the whole parrot that a mafata, a mafuta, the money goes to her father? Like, what's this crazy havamina? What's the havamina that all of a sudden she should have the right to be mochel? Right? That's a valid question. What's the havamina? So, which of course brings up the right of the setting. Shira'in Sheli Vihi Potter. What is the Havamina? I apologize. I think I meant to put this on the course sheet, but I didn't. The Rashba here. I'll have to tell you what the Rashba says. The Rashba actually is so... It's such a strange Havamina. I mean, the whole... I don't mean what's the Havamina if you never had a Chumash. Okay, you can think whatever you want. I mean, the whole parent, we all know that it goes to the father, right? We all know that even though she's a Mefuta, she has no right to be Mochel and goes to the father. That's Pashit. A Yesoma is different, but if she has a father, Pashit, it goes to the father. So what's the Havamina? The Rashba goes as far as to say, you know what? There was no Havamina. He never actually said this, or at least in the way that we thought. He really didn't mean this at all. It was just a misunderstanding. Like, he said something that sounded like he was saying she's a baal bas to be moichel. And we said, what do you mean? And he said, no, that's not what I meant. I just expressed myself unclearly. What's his raya in the diuk of the Shakvataria that he never really meant to say this at all? Because who's the one who offered the next alternative? Same person. We're not Rav Barvua. He says something, then we're mafrika. Then he says something else. Usually, like, Rabba says something, or Mafrika Rabbi says something else, or Mafrika Rabba says something else. Why is he himself saying something else? So he could have said he changed his mind. He says, no, he was saying this is what I meant the whole time. You thought I meant she can be mochel to deter money? That's not what I meant. What I meant is that she doesn't feel the tzar at all. What I meant is, it's like a muscle of someone who doesn't mind at all. If I say, tear my shirt, why do I care? It just doesn't bother me at all. That's what I meant to say. I didn't mean to say she can be mochel. I meant to say it doesn't hurt in the first place. It's a bit of a duck and shot in the sugya. Yeah? So, the Rashba says there is no Havamina. And, although you're right, you could ask, what's the Havamina we thought? Okay, but fine. Never meant this. It was just a poor choice of words that led to a misunderstanding. Okay. If we want to say there really is a Havamina, what might you say the Havamina was? How else might you explain the Havamina? What's the Havamina? Krashi Rayin Shalivi Hipater? Don't we know the whole perek that it goes to the father and that she can't be mochel the father's money?
Well, the tzar goes to her.
Aha! So you might say the Havamina is Knas and Boshes and Pagam in the Havamina, you might say. Knas and Boshes and Pagam go to the father. But Sa'ar is hers. Right? You might have the Havamina, Knas and Boshes and Pagam go to the father, but Sa'ar is hers. Right? As a matter of fact, there is even a sheet in the Hilchos Avodah Maskana, right? Who's that? Who held the Avodah Maskana? Maybe. Okay. The right is?
Right.
Right. The Kesef Mishnah Kohen to the right, but not the version we have in our Hasagos, right? There may be a right like this Maskana, which would be very weak, and we'll come back to that in a moment, but what you might, this is not exactly the Ritva. The Ritva is, how do I mean? The Ritva is saying a little differently. The Ritva is much more subtle. What is the Ritva saying? The Havamina is? Bitzar da'anusa. If you read the Ritva carefully, he admits even the Havamina, the Tzar of an Anusa goes to the father. It's not like Tzar in general goes to the goes to the girl. No, it's Tzar of an Anusa goes to the girl. It's only the Tzar of the Mefuta that turns to be Mocha. I will read it inside and show you that subtle distinction. Says the Ritva. It's a short one, I think. Yeah. Kolomar. Afa pishi yesh la tsar, harei hi mochel, 1 second. Ah. Aviesh lomer, di iu sabr, shul zachsa tor la ave la tsar danusa. The father is, of course, only the tsar of an anusa. He admits the father gets tsar of an anusa. Da dum yachavos bi almo, which is like a regular case of choval, kshi vitra gufa lo zachel archman amidi. Okay, so you see there are two subtly different ways to read the, Havamina. Okay, Rishash has another way here, but that's a little more. You could read the Havamina as Tsar doesn't go to the father. Or you could read the Havamina of Tsar of an Anusa goes to the father, but I'll explain that in a moment. Let's start with, though, the and again, I don't have number two of reading the Havamina. I don't actually have any Rishonim who interpret the Havamina anymore that way. All I have is one Rishonim who actually paskins that way, which I guess b'chol mos hayimana, you know. like the Shita of the right, but at least some Gersos in the right. What's the Havamina? Why should Tsar not go to the father? Why should Tsar go to her? Anyone? Why should Tsar go to her instead of the father?
Like a
Stam wound. A Stam wound, all of the things go to her, and over here, they don't.
Doesn't affect the value. Of future
thing, right, so a simple shot might be because it doesn't affect her value the way, what does the Gemara say later on? How does the Gemara know that Boshem Gam goes to the father? Because he could, charge for this boshes pagam, right? By the pagam means the fact that now she marries someone, right? She develops to someone. That obviously you can take money and marry off to someone. And even the boshes, what does the boshes mean? Ah, she develops by someone of a low social stature. So he can take extra money and marry off to someone of a low social stature. We're not saying that would make him a nice person. But he could, right? No one's going to stop him. You can't sue him to stop. but Tsar, right? Tsar is a little funny, right? He doesn't get paid for, he can't charge him money for Tsar, for social status and for the act of being, the change in her body. You know, that is something which she, but Tsar, A, is, you know, much more personal, you know, is her personal feeling, and not only that, it's not something which is a saleable commodity. So I think that would be a reasonable Havamina. Right, so what's the svara of the Havamina, if so? And that's based on the Gemara, by the way, in Bava Kamma. The Gemara in Bava Kamma says that, you know, if you injure the daughter now, he can't sell her to number three or marry her off, and no one wants her, so he loses money, so maybe you should have to pay him. But Sarah de Gufa, for the suffering she endured, like, why should that money go to him? Like, what is his shaykhus to that? What's the svar of the Havmina? The svar of the Havmina is that ein lo shaykhus lifnei she'eino yachol l'tzara, right? He can't take this, you know, it's not that he can charge money for the right to be mitzara her, right? That's boshes, social status. So you can take money for lowering of social status. You can take money for begam, for, you know, becoming a married woman as opposed to a basula. But, so what's the answer of the Gemara? So what's the maskana? What's the maskana?
Is it this type of stuff he does?
Who says that? Someone on the cover sheet, right?
Yeshua, I think, said it.
The Pnei Yeshua said that, and in a much more straightforward fashion, I think I gave you the Ron in the beginning of the first of the fourth parak, right? Although all the Rishonim Sfarim from Beit Midrash Shel Ramban say the same thing there. The Pnei Yeshua says, yeah, the father could be mitzar her by giving her over to the Baal. And that's what all the Rishonim say there. The father could be mitzar her. Okay, hold that thought for a second. What's the maskana? You know what? Well, worry about this when we come to it. The maskana, one way the maskana, which is the Ramban, Rashba, Ritva, Viran, Reish Perek Dalet, and the Pnei Yeshua here in our sugya says no. B'yadol etzara, he is the bailam over this tzara. He could be mitzar her and even take money, right? Right? He could be mitzar her. After all, someone will give him money and he'll marry her off and then she'll have the tzar. Okay, the tricky part here that they bothered to Yeshua is, what do you mean biyadu l'tzara? Didn't we just say mefuta ein l'tzara? What do you mean biyadu l'tzara? It's not biyadu. He can't sell money for someone to rape her, chas v'shalom. He can only take money for someone to marry her. When they marry her, so they make a nice party and they buy her a white dress and she gets a nice apartment and it's very exciting and she's a mefuta. And there won't be any tzar. That's what people say. There is no tzar on the wedding night. So what's this biyadu l'tzara? So here, right? The af al pi the mefuta ein lo tzar. Didn't Bas Rav Chisda say, there really was no tzar when my father married me off? And Bas Abbas Rav, there was no tzar when my father married me off. So what is it? Biyadu lo tzara. So the Pnei Yeshua says, based on Tosfos. He says, based on Tosfos, no. Remember when a girl gets married according to Tosfos, there's two different kinds of tzar. There's Pisuk Raglayim and there's Bir Rishona. The piece of good lime is like 2% and the B Rishona is like 98% maybe. Or 10% to 90%. The 10% piece of good lime is what a mefuta doesn't have and a nusa does. The 90% of B Rishona, everyone has. You're just part of that because it's a grama or because it's kashgufna sofotat or because it's kashgufna. But, of course, a mefuta has tsar of the B Rishona, just not a piece of good lime. According to Tosfos, right? And what Tosfos says, they didn't mean, I had no tzar when I got married. They mean, I didn't have tzar pisuk raglayim. I only had tzar b'Rishona. So then he has to add one more point. Pnei Yehoshua tirates. De'ein la tzar pisuk raglayim. Aval yeshla tzar biya. And then he just had one thing. Once the father is the Bailam over the Tsar Biya, then he's the Bailam over all the Tsar. Okay, he has to like, he has to like take a tramp. But he has to say, that's his one thing he has to, first thing, he's just like Tosos, there's Biya and there's Pisi with Goyim. Everyone is Tsar Biya Rishona. Yesh lo Tsar Biya Rishona. Ve, Hoel, Ve Av,
what's his lashon here? On the Tsar Gadol,
the Yesh lo Zchus, the Tsar Gadol Zeh, Yesh lo Zchus, the Chola Tsar. That's how the Pnei Yeshua answers. He says, ah, the father is vital over the Tsar. He does own the Tsar. How does he own the Tsar? Because he can marry her off. Ah, there's no Tsar and she gets married. No, according to Tosos, there's no piece of reliance. There's no small Tsar, but there's a big Tsar. And once he's the Bible of the big Tsar, so mainly the Bible of all the Tsar, it's just, you know, Iker
Batofel. Okay, there's a big hit. That's missing the point. And the fruit that he's talked her into it, she's now at this point willingly going into it. When he's most relative to the Nouveau Shvim, even during
exactly, the that's what the Ron says. The Ron says, it's really, it's a good smart. The Ron T rates. After all, Iboy Masala to who? Iboy Masala to Prince Charming? True, but that's not the Gemara's example, right? That's not, you know, that might be more common in real life, but that's not as conceptually, you know, as conceptually mechodesh. Iboy Masala Novel Mukashchin. Hold on, if the father marries her after Novel Mukashchin, then she won't be a mafuta. She won't want to marry him. And then there will be Tsar because she'll be an Anusa. And I'm not talking about the Anusa of our Perek. That's a girl, a single girl. But she, that's what he said, Nivellus Lobal Karchom, it's the Eris. So, okay, not a pretty logic, but it's a valid logic. Baran Tirates. The Iboy Masar La. Limnuvo umukashchin, vinit elis, balkorcha, umitsa eris. He does have the rights of the tsar, so he can marry someone who she doesn't like, and then there'll be tsar working under the assumption that once he marries her, umukashchin, she's not going to say, okay, let's make the best of it, but an average person will say no, and go kicking and screaming. And therefore, it will be, and it won't be exactly like a regular kind of anusa, but it won't exactly be mafuta either, and she'll still have the tsar. Okay, this is the way the Ramban, Rash, Rif, and Ran, and the Bnei Yeshua justify the maskana. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying this is how they read the Havmina, necessarily. This is just how they justify the maskana, regardless of what the Havmina was. but, yeah.
Going back, to me, the Havamim that we said there was Havamim, it doesn't make sense. Because Kurashir and Shali, the victim...
Am I about to erase? Take a picture, so I need to erase.
The victim starts the action. But over here by Mafuta, the victim doesn't start the action, the attacker starts the action. So it's not the same... It's not the same setup. You can't...
That is an interesting time.
It seems that it's not really that problem either.
I hear the taina, but it's not a taina mukrachas. I mean, you're right. Over here, I go over and say to you, why don't you rip my shirt? As opposed to this case, you come to ask to rip my shirt and I say, okay. But that could be a difference in that distinction. It could be halachically equivalent. If we wanted to distinguish, we could, but we don't have to distinguish. We could say, Lamaisa, permission is permission, regardless of whether I offered or you asked and I agreed. So, it's not a kasha. Yeah, you can build a teretz out of that chiluk, but I don't think you can build a kasha out of that chiluk. Right? There are chilukim that are good teretzim and chilukim that are even kashas. This is not a kasha chiluk. As we look as you say, it might be a distinction without a difference. Now, I think that you see, by the way, that perhaps there could be another approach to explaining Lamaskana why the father gets tsar. I mean, this is a very, it's a very, bleak or, pessimistic. pessimistic approach, which, okay, might be true, fine, it works for both Shibagam. But Rashi here says something fascinating. What does Rashi say on our sugya? Yeah, someone just said it, I heard that. Rashi says, all shvach the urim goes to the father, right? Now, that seems to be like it sounds like a bit of a different logic. All the shvach the urim, what is shvach? Yeah, that's almost a gemara. Yes. Oh, what do you mean all shvach the urim? Right? Maybe there's a special rule. All shvach the urim means all profit that comes because you have to hear what the urim means, right? It doesn't mean any profit that comes in any way, shape, or form because during the time that she is a youth. But it means any the profit that comes from her youth, which would include from her besulin, goes to the father. Who else expresses himself this way besides Rashi? Not on the page of the Gemara? The Rambam. What does the Rambam say? The Rambam says, Shlosha dvarim shal mefatev yarba shal onesh v'in shal av. Father gets everything, including tzar, right? Why? Shekol shvach de'urim lo. All shvach de'urim goes to him. He seems to have, like, they don't say, Ibai masul al nuvul mukashchim. They say, shvach de'urim. Now, this is a bit of a chiddush. You could say they mean it lav davka. But, well, okay, first let me explain what we mean. If you turn, and I asked you to look at it on the Makorah sheet, to Daf Mem Amud Beis, the Gemara says, in Daf Mem Amud Beis, in the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11th line, the Eimel Lididah, maybe she gets Boshet of Gam, not the father. Amar Krabin, a Rebbe Zaviyah, I'll call Shvachnum Leviyah. No, all the Shvachnum goes to the father. That sounds exactly like Rashi and the Rambam, right? The only problem is the Gemara says the Elo Hadam Rav Hunam Rav Minayin Shemaisa Vasla Viyah Shenem Rechim Kor Ishet Bitul Oma Ma Oma Maisi Adela Rav Bas Maisi Adela Viha Lamali Tevelim Gerbeis Aviha. Then why does Rav need a drusha to say that her earnings go to her father? Let him just say Kol Shvach Na'urim La'av Elo Hahiva First Nderm Hudichsev. No, that possibly in the Rebbeis Aviha is not talking about monetary profits in the Urim. It's only talking about a First Nderm. That he can be made for an dharma. He came a nail from the number one of serial fina. If you say learn money from the dharma, you can't learn money from Isser. Basically, that pasuk of shachta urim is not really true. It was a havina. Really, we say nah. That pasuk is really talking about first. The dharma has nothing to do with mum, and you can't learn money from Isser. It's not about shvach. And if you're saying to learn boshuvam from knas, no, you can't learn mamun from knas. Why did the father get boshuvam? Because it's his financial stake. It's he's the bailiff, because he could give her to Umnum Mukashkin, and it's his boshabagan that he has the right to give away to whoever he desires, and therefore the money goes to him. So it sounds like the havmin of the father gets money to the shvach the urim. The maskana is to the Umnum Mukashkin. That works fine for the Pnei Yeshua and the Ramban and the Ritva and the Rashba and the Ran. Yeah, shvach the urim is not a factor. It's all about Iboy Mashallah. That's what he's saying. Just like he could have given her away her boshabagan, he could have given away her tzar. And then you just work out the details. Rashi and the Rambam here say shvach the urim, so you could say their lashon is all lav davka, but that's not as likely. The Rambam liked to use more davka lashon, and Rashi specifically at this point in the Gemara, you think might be using a lashon that would be explanatory, not just lav davka. So it could be.
Rashi that also used in the Chumash too. I think some places.
Does Rashi say that in Parshas Matos?
Sure. I think he does somewhere.
That would be nice. Is a whole Machlok Zachronu you should know about whether Rashi and Chumash is going to leave the Hilchasa or just trying to explain Pshat. Rashi says. I don't know. Okay, you have to figure it out. Maybe. And why does Rashi say it specifically on this line? Maybe what Rashi's saying is that the Havmina was, he has bailus over Boshim Gam, he doesn't have bailus over Tsar. The Maskone is, it's not because of Mashallah, it's because of Shvach the Urim. Shvach the Urim is in general. Meaning, maybe what they're trying to say is that Afal Pi Sh'ein Lo Shaychus lakachas kesef ulitzara against that other pshat, mikol makom, kol shvach neurim le'av. Maybe they understand the maskana daf mem beis a little differently. Not the maskana is we reject shvach neurim le'av and instead have b'yabari muslim minimal b'shchin. The maskana is that we can't darshan shvach neurim le'av on its own, but because of the svar v'nun l'gashken, we go back and we resurrect and find a proof for shvach neurim le'av. What I'm claiming is that what's the maskana hasugya on daf mem of day, there are two ways to read the maskana. One way to read is that there is no din of shvach neurim le'av. Elarak din ibai masar la vechuli. But maybe the way Rashi and the Rambam read that Gemara is that we couldn't learn shvach neurim le'av from the pasuk we thought we could, because that was about hafras nedarim and modim yisur lo yafina, right? But through the svar v'nun l'kashchin, he go back and learn din shvach neurim le'av acharei shalomadnu svaras ibai masar la. The Chuli Tosus will say something, by the way, that is similar to this. Tosus will say something similar to this. Tosus will say, once we know Ibar Maslow, Novelim Ukashchin, now we see that there's a heckish of Boshe Begam to, okay, we'll get to that. The, once we learned that, this will happen. That there's a din of that the father has shaykhas. Once you learn the father has shaykhas to Boshe Begam, Shub, or we prove from there that all Shvach Neurim La'av. Once we know Shvach Neurim La'av in Isura, Shvach Neurim La'av in Knossa, Shvach Neurim La'av in Mamona, we build the binyan av that kol Shvach Neurim La'av. Let's see, even better. Lomdin me Isura plus Knossa plus Mamona. Now that we have a Mokar Isser, a Mokar and Knas. Mokar and Isser is Benarev Esaviyah. A Mokar and Knas is Benasa Ma'aviyanara. Mokar and Mamon is Ibar Mosul and Lukum Lukashchin. Now we learn the Kol Shvach Neurim La'av, and once we learn Kol Shvach Neurim La'av, even something if we didn't have a specific Mokar for, like Tsar, still falls into the general category of Shvach Neurim La'av, and then Rashi would be super duper Meduyak. What's Rashi saying? Ah, we have a Havin and not Tsar, and why in the end do we say yes, Tsar? Because of Shvach Neurim La'av. We couldn't have gotten that Menorah Lukashchit. But we can get a Shvach Neurim La'av. This is a chiddush in how to read the Maskam of the Gemara Daf Mem on base. Again, I don't think it's my chiddush. A lot of our corner are dying this, but it's still chiddush. But maybe that would explain Rashi, how he's so meduyik in our sugya, why he dafka brings it in this line. And that would explain the Rambam. The, sorry. The, yes?
How do we know what's included in
How do we know what's included in Shvach Neurim and what's not? That is an excellent question. So one answer, one second, hold on, I just put a different kasha on this. Okay, if you look at the Gemara Daf Mem Vav in the fourth parak, you would have to modify what I said slightly, but it would work out the same even better. Because there they also added another pasuk for Kedushin just to prove even things that, well, okay, depends how you read the Maskana there. All right, we'll come back to this enough in days then. How do you know what's included in Shvach Neurim? So you'd say the simple pshat might be that Shvach Neurim means anything that has to do with. Anything that has to do. Well, the. The easiest way to say anything that has to do with because if she gets a Yerusha from like, you know, her mother's great uncle, then it doesn't go to the father. Right? That's not Shvach Ne'urim. So Shvach Ne'urim might be anything that has to do with her, like, her guf as Ne'urah Besaviha, as opposed to the fact that she has a certain status, that she gets matanos and wins the lotteries, and, you know, but anything that comes from her guf would be Shvach Ne'urim, which would go to the Av. That would explain Ma'aseh Deha and Knas and etc. Okay, so this might be, yeah. Not all, correct. So I may have to, no, it's not going to work out as well. I could just plead that it's past 11 o'clock. but that wouldn't be nice to me, would it? that wouldn't be nice at all.
We have 2 minutes, you can cover this whole.
Yeah, we have a lot to do. We're only halfway through the page. What would be the getter of Shvach Ne'urim according to this Rashi, the Rambam, who seems to take this, they do seem to take this seriously, but how do they know what Shvach Ne'urim and what's not Shvach Ne'urim? Unless you, I might end up being a little circular. Shvach Ne'urim is anything that has to do with things that the father controls. And therefore, even if he wouldn't specifically have a way of making money from Tsar, since it is part of the Shvach that comes out of marriage and Knas that he controls, he would get it, which would explain perhaps also the Maskana, you know, Kesef Kiddushin, because he's in charge of Kiddushin. Maybe I could come up with a better getter. Okay, we're a little bit in the middle of this conversation, I admit. And we didn't even get to number 3, which is probably a good thing, because I don't know if anyone in the world ever actually figured out Shad at number 3. Although I know one person is working very hard on it. We'll have to just continue. It's very late. We'll have to continue this conversation later, or next time. So next time we will continue this conversation. We'll look briefly at number 3 and see what we can do with it. Maybe I will throw in a few records on the next sheet to just jog your memory of things that are tying to number 3 somewhat. But I admit, being these are very difficult Rambams, and you know, I think we'll be able to successfully, with great lumdus, explain them halfway very nicely. To explain them 100% is going to be trickier, but we'll try our best. And then we'll go on in the Gemara. The next sugya will be going on for the second half of Daf Lamed Tesamid Beis, you know, up to the last line, which is already the sugya for the time after. And I'll send out Makoros.
What do you want to do?
So I'm going to just finish up number 2.